Welcome to Gleaning and Gathering. My name is Eric Heimlich, and I'm your host today. And today, my mind is thinking about this topic of blessing and being a community of blessing. I was reading yesterday in Psalms 109, and something stuck out to me that I don't think I've ever seen before, but it's something that I've been chewing on. In verses 17 and 18, David is saying there in regards to someone who has betrayed him, he loved to curse others, so those curses have come upon him. He had no desire to bless anyone, so he has experienced no blessings. He made cursing a way of life. You know, I was thinking about that in relation to our situation here at Victory Acres. You know, to have a community of blessing requires an abundant mindset. If your mindset is there's not enough, there's never going to be enough, and so what I've got to keep, I've got to hoard, I've got to keep for myself, there's not going to be any blessing mentality, if you will, in that. The question that I was thinking about is, are we making cursing or blessing a way of life? And I think it's a question worth considering. You know, a lot of times we think about cursing and blessing in the extreme. And, you know, to pronounce a curse on something or on someone is something that we would never think of doing. And yet, what kinds of words are we speaking towards people? Are they words that are lifting them up, or are they words that are tearing them down? Because really, that's the essence of a blessing or of a curse. In this passage, this person who has betrayed David apparently saw the relationship that he had with David as not something enough to be valued or desired to preserve that. And so David is calling out to God. In Acts, the apostles quote from Psalms 109. When they say regarding Judas, may his days be few and may his job be taken by another, they're using that in reference to Judas's betrayal of Jesus, saying we need to add someone else to our number. But I think that this passage of scripture really, when you look at what we give many times, is what comes back to us. He loved to curse others, and so those curses have come upon him. And he had no desire to bless others, and so he's not experienced a blessing. I know in my own life, there have been many, many people along the way that have blessed me. I don't deserve the kinds of opportunities and blessings that have come to me. And I am so grateful for the tremendous investment of other people that has blessed my life. People that have opened doors, people that have provided me paradigms and knowledge that I didn't even know existed. I don't know how many of you have read the Rich Dad, Poor Dad series, but if you haven't, I highly recommend it. But that paradigm of looking at the world is, I think, one example of many of the way that thinking can lock us into a certain way of acting or being. And when we have other people who come along and they bless us with knowledge beyond that paradigm that we're in, it is such a revolutionary thing. It just opens up new possibilities, new things that we didn't even know existed. This last evening, we were at Heartland Christian School's parent orientation. And as I walked around the building there before the event and was just looking at all that God has done there, in the past 9 years that our family has been apart, so much has been done. It started out in one little tiny room, and I think there were maybe 25 students there, something like that when we first began. And this year there are over 200 students that are there, and families that are dedicated to seeing their children trained with a Christian education. And it's just such a blessing to see how God has been working there. It's a community of blessing is what it is. I've seen a lot of different Christian education models, if you will, or examples over the years. Many of them kind of devolve to the lowest common denominator. And again, I understand many of them are working on a shoestring budget. They're part of a church, and we just don't have the money is the common answer. And so we just do whatever we can just barely afford to do. That's the way it operates, is how can we do this with the least possible input? But Heartland's example of saying we're going to provide a quality Christian education and we're going to do this and do this well has meant that they have never lacked for attracting quality teachers. They've never lacked for attracting families that want a quality education for their young people and are willing to invest in that financially. And they've done it right. And so every year there's just so many wonderful people that come together and are part of that, that you can't help but feel that energy and that excitement when you're there and are seeing what God is doing. Then to see a number of the graduates that go out, work on a degree of some kind, and come back because they had such an amazing experience there and they want to be part of that again. And so there are a number of graduates from Heartland, including my oldest daughter, that are now back there and working in some capacity and excited to be there. And I think that speaks well. You know, it's one thing when you're there because your parents have told you you have to be there. It's another thing when you come back on your own and choose to be there because it's something that you believe in and want to be part of. I think Heartland Christian School is a great example of a community of blessing, a place where they have made blessing a way of life. And there is an attitude of abundance. It's exciting to see how God has provided and how He's continuing to work there. You know, I've been praying that God would give me the same kind of attitude toward what we're doing here at Victory Acres. I want this to be a place of blessing. And many times the human tendency is to go into fear and preservation mode. How can I just hold on and preserve what I have? Because what if it doesn't happen? What if the funds don't come in? What if we aren't able to find a way forward? And there's a lot of fear. When you look at the world ahead and you see what could be on the horizon, you don't have to have a very creative imagination to look at that and say, there's some bad things that could be right around the corner. But if you're not careful, allowing that fear to drive everything keeps you from seeing and keeps you from acting in a blessing mindset. And I found myself falling into that. And as I was reading this yesterday and thinking about it and praying, one of the verses that stuck out to me, verses 26 and 27, there in Psalms 109, "Help me, O Lord, my God, because you are faithful to me, deliver me, and then they will realize this is your work, and that you, Lord, have accomplished it. They curse, but you will bless." There may be people all around us that are living, you know, a cursing kind of life, but God is not in that business. He is in the business of blessing. And you see that in nature. We put one seed of corn in the ground, and what does God do? He provides like 250 on an ear for the one that we put in the ground. And that's the kind of God we serve, a God of abundance. And I think that's one of the many lessons that we see in the parables of Jesus and in the miracles of Jesus. You know, the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000 was about meeting a practical need. And yet, what are the 12 baskets of fragments that are gathered up at the end? Is it, you know, we need to preserve this because we may need this tomorrow? Is that the reason? No, Jesus is showing the super abundant nature of the kingdom. There's more than enough. In kingdom economics, it's not based on scarcity. We don't have enough, and so we've got to raise the price to the point that only those who can afford it can have it. Instead, Jesus says, "Everyone who's thirsty, come to the water. You who have no money, come, buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk without money and without cost. Why do you pay money for something that won't nourish you? Why do you spend your hard-earned money on something that will not satisfy?" That's the nature of the kingdom. That doesn't make any sense. Come and buy wine and milk without money and without cost? What is that? Those are costly items, especially in that day. Some of the costliest. You know, it's one thing to come and drink water. It's another thing to come and buy wine and milk without money and without cost. And so, what is the nature of the kingdom? It's a nature of abundance. It's a nature of blessing. Because we've been blessed, we can afford to bless others. Because we have freely received, we can freely give. When I think about the parable that Jesus told, of the man that he hired laborers in the morning and he agreed with them, you know, one denarii for the day. And then he says there was another group of workers that were hired on later, and then some at noon, and then some at 3 o'clock, and some just right down there at closing time, just an hour to go. And then he begins with the last, and he pays them a whole denarii, a whole day's wages for 1 hour's worth of work, and then goes down the line and proceeds to bless every single person there, regardless of how long they worked. But he gets to the people at the beginning, the people who agreed to work for this, and they're upset. And why are they upset? They're upset because he has blessed someone else. And they think that somehow they should deserve more. And friends, if we're not careful, that attitude can become our attitude in relation to kingdom life. God has given us more than we deserve. How in the world can we look down the line at someone else and say, well, why is he giving them that? They don't deserve that. Who are we kidding? We don't deserve anything except death and hell. That's what we deserve. But our good God has blessed us with good things. And so why can't we, in that same spirit, bless others? And so I'm asking God to give me that kind of heart. Heart of blessing. Not just a bean-counting spirit of, well, did they do enough to actually deserve this? But, Lord, help me to bless. And in the course of that blessing, to be a good steward of what you've given me, but to recognize that you've given it to me. It's not mine. I'm a steward of it. There are a lot of things we're doing to try to work and develop enterprises. But I'm recognizing along the way that a large portion of what God is teaching us as we're doing this work is that as we bless others, we are blessed. That's the way it works. That blessing may take many different forms. And so it doesn't always compute. It doesn't always add up. But God is the one who's keeping the books. And we're trying to be faithful with what he's given us. But at the same time, recognizing that as we cast our bread upon the water, as we take care of the needs that God sends to us, people that don't have anything to give us, people that don't have anything to pay for or to remunerate us directly for what they're receiving, that as we are a blessing to them, that God uses our investment in their lives and somehow ends up sending in resources and people and volunteers and others who come and bless us as we are a blessing to other people. And at the end of the day, somehow there's enough to take care of the bills and to meet the needs. And God gives us each day our daily bread. And so there's a tendency, at least on my part, to look ahead and say, well, yeah, I mean, we have it now, but how are we going to have it? And where is it going to come from? And to try to figure that out in a human sort of way and build something or develop something that, you know, hopefully will be a pipeline where we don't have to worry anymore about how the funds are going to come in. And yet, God, it seems like again and again, gives us opportunities like planting sweet corn that end up being a blessing to others. But in the process, we are blessed. And so yesterday, I was out picking a patch of sweet corn with Samuel, and the breeze was blowing, and we were having some great conversations. And unfortunately, the raccoons got a lot of our corn. And I was frustrated about that. And we were talking about the downside of that. It's good corn, obviously. The raccoons had enjoyed it. And some of those ears were just eaten clean down to the end. And yet, there was more than enough. There was a superabundance there. And even though the raccoons took a bunch and that was not something I was happy about, the abundance of the bounty that God had provided meant that we still had dozens and dozens of ears of corn there. It was a blessing, even in spite of the cursing of the raccoons, if you will. I'm sure it was a blessing to them from their perspective. Raccoons have to eat too, I guess. But what is our perspective? Do we only see the negative? Or do we see the positive of what God has provided and what he's doing? And as we were working along, the opportunity to work alongside my son, the blessing that it was to be able to harvest sweet corn in this field where there are bees buzzing and flowers that are blooming and all kinds of life all around us that's just teeming, and that we're getting to do this together. And that as people come today and pick up that sweet corn and take it back to their homes and freeze it or can it or put it up in one way or another, they're going to be blessing Victory Acres, and they are going to be blessed in the process as they eat that this fall and this winter, and they're thinking about the farm where God provided it, where he grew it. It's going to be a blessing to them and to the people who gather around their table. Later today, we're going to be loading one wagon of 200 bales for one customer, and there's going to be someone else coming for 15 or so bales. And as they take that back to their horses, they're going to be thanking God for the hay that was provided at Victory Acres. You know, Proverbs says that blessing shall be upon the head of him that sells corn. The people will bless him. And there's this this dual blessing that happens really in every economic transaction. You think about at a coffee shop, the person selling the coffee, when they sell a cup, says thank you. And the person receiving the cup says thank you, because the person on one side of the counter wanted the money more than they wanted the coffee. And the person on the other side of the counter wanted the coffee more than they needed the money. And so there's this transaction that happens. And there's this dual blessing. And so whether it's providing coffee, whether it's the selling of sweet corn, whether it's the opportunity to be able to host people in the cabins that we have here at Victory Acres, whatever it is, those sorts of exchanges really are more than just financial transactions. They are an opportunity for us to bless. I came across a book recently called From Selling to Serving, The Essence of Client Creation by Lou Cassara. And I haven't gotten through the whole book yet, but that's really kind of the essence, that in business, any business, whatever we're doing, if we have the mentality of blessing, if we have the mentality of this is an opportunity and we're going to bless not just our customers, but also the people doing the work, it's amazing what can be done. I was talking with a friend that has a company, and that's his mentality in his company. His mentality is, I want to take care of my people first, because my people are the ones who take care of my customers. And if I take care of my people and make sure that their needs are met, that I'm blessing them, I know that then they are going to in turn take care of my customers. And that's the way that he grows his business, is this mentality of blessing. And I want to grow in that. I don't know about you, but many times that is a harder attitude to maintain than what it may sound like. But having that kind of spirit towards the people that are part of our team, how can we bless? How can we uplift? How can we encourage? Really is the way forward. I don't know too many people that want to be a part of a team where the philosophy is the beatings will continue until morale improves. I've been a part of a few teams like that. And there's just this downward spiral that happens. I remember a few years ago, I was part of a company that will remain unnamed, but it was a severely dysfunctional situation. And I did not realize that when I started. The leader of the company, I was working at Steak and Shake. He came in, he gave me a $100 tip, was incredibly gracious and offered me a job. And so I, after investigating it, it just sounded amazing. I ended up hiring on with the company, and I was there for about 9 months. But while I was there, the company was imploding. I began to see signs of that. And there were some high-level people that he had hired that were part of the company and then were very abruptly fired or quit. And I remember one particularly tense meeting where I think it was the chief operating officer had just been fired. And he calls everybody into the office, the main leader did, and said, there is only one person in this organization that matters, and that's me. Everybody else here is expendable. And if I ever see you talking with anyone who's been fired from this company in the store, or having any communication with anyone who's been released from this, you know, you will be let go. You know, you could have heard a pin drop in the room after he finished. And it was the beginning of the end. The business ended up imploding and bankruptcy ensued about, I think, 6 to 8 months later. And thankfully, I exited the company well ahead of all that drama. But it was just a completely and totally dysfunctional situation. It was not a place of blessing. It was a place of cursing. And I came to realize that his selfishness and his hubris and a lot of the drama in the company was completely unnecessary. It really wasn't part of the business and didn't need to be part of the business. And yet, instead of finding good people, empowering them, getting out of their way, letting them do their job, and then finding more people that were of that mindset and building this, things took a dark, dark turn, and it went under. I think in all of our lives, there's a tendency, if we're not careful, to just focus on number one. And whether or not we say what my boss said or not, there's a tendency to think it. The only person that matters here is me. I'm going to take care of me. And that kind of preservation mindset leads to a way of life that cursings are the way of operating. As he says there in Psalms 109, he made cursing a way of life. Friends, we can trust a sovereign God to take care of us. We can trust that God will provide. He is Jehovah Jireh. And in that trust, we can know that because we have been blessed, we can make the choice to bless others. It's an act of faith. And so my question for you this week to ponder is, are you living a life of blessing or a life of cursing? What is filling your life? For Gleaning and Gathering, God bless.